Yeah, so hi to everybody. I'm people in Stanford. So this is a talk about work I did with Kumar Vafa in December. I suppose I should apologize a priori. I think this is going to be sort of a hard talk, not because the things I'm going to talk about are very complicated, but there's just a lot of stuff. But anyway, but it is all, it's in essence, conceptually simple. Okay, so one of the nice achievements of string theory is mirror symmetry. So, so mirror symmetry relates questions involving Kähler geometry of a Calabi-Yau manifold X to questions about complex geometry of a different Calabi-Yau manifold X hat. So, string theory on a Calabi-Yau. It's described by a nonlinear sigma model. And from this nonlinear sigma model, you can by twisting, you can obtain two inequivalent theories, which are simpler. One of them is called an A model, and it's simpler because it depends only on the Kähler structure of X and not on the complex structure. Or by a different twist, a topological B model, which only depends on the complex structure. Okay, so since mirror symmetry changes the Kähler structure and a complex structure, this tells you that the A model of X is the same as the B model of X hat. Okay, so since the two theories are the same, all the amplitudes you compute in one theory should be the same in the other as in the other theory. So, and the amplitudes of the A model are given in terms of numbers of homomorphic curves in the Calabi-Yau. For example, the three-point functions are given simply. So this Q here is so D labels the cohomology class of a sphere. So it's a map from a homomorphic map from the world here to X. Okay. So D tells you how it wraps spheres in the Calabi-Yau. N is simply the number of you have, okay, thanks. N is simply the number of ways you can perform such a map, and Q is just related to the action of the string of a string instanton. So it's just basically just the volume, just the complexified volume of the given curve. Okay, so but. So this is what A model does for you. On the other hand, the B model amplitudes, they do not depend on the volume of the Calabi-Yau at all. You can scale the Calabi-Yau to very large size, and in this limit, and so the B model is essentially a point particle theory, and their amplitudes are given by classical periods of differential forms. So what does it do? What does this do for you? As Candela showed in the mid-90s, what you can do is, for mathematicians, you can compute numbers of homomorphic curves. Does this sound good? You can compute numbers of homomorphic curves in X hat using simple computations and the mirror geometry. Okay, and if you want more physically, this allowed Shamit and Kumran and other people to solve n equals to 2 supersymmetric gauge theories in 4 dimensions, because the three-point functions physically, in terms of physical string theory, they compute third derivatives of the prepotential for you, of the n equals to 2 theory in 4 dimensions. Okay, so this is all stuff. Now, mirror symmetry is believed to be a symmetry not just of conformal field theory, but of full string theory. So in particular, mirror symmetry should, so it is natural to ask, how does mirror symmetry act on D-brains, okay? So on general grounds, it is expected that mirror symmetry changes special Lagrangian submanifolds with homomorphic cycles. I will tell you more about what these are, but what I will do in this talk is I will show you how to construct special Lagrangians for a certain class of Calabi-Yau manifolds, which actually it's actually a very large class. And then I will show you how to identify mirror holomorphic cycles for a given special Lagrangian. And this crucially uses results of Kintaro-Hori and Kumar-Vafa. And they basically succeeded in making mirror symmetry geometric, so you can actually ask, how does mirror symmetry act on submanifolds and act on D-brains? Okay? Okay, so This topological A model admits boundaries on special Lagrangian submanifolds, and so it admits special Lagrangian D-brains. Okay, so then their amplitudes are given in terms of numbers of holomorphic curves which end on the special Lagrangian. Okay, so it's the holomorphic curves with boundaries on your D-brain. So as an application of the things I did here, and also as a very strong numerical check, what I will do is I will use a simple B model computation to count numbers of holomorphic disks in the A model problem. And this is a very hard problem in mathematics, which is not solved at all. And yeah, so we have quite a few of predictions by now, more than those I will talk about today. And some of them have already been verified by, for example, our friend Charles Cotes. Anyway, so as I said, I will begin by constructing the special Lagrangian submanifold of a Calabi-Yau. And if you look in the mathematics literature, there are very few examples of such. Okay? And so a special Lagrangian is defined by a local condition that the restriction of the Kähler form on the Calabi-Yau on it vanishes, and well, up to a phase that the imaginary part of the holomorphic 3 form vanishes. They might be really suffering. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so one of the problems for this, obviously, is that a special Lagrangian condition involves an explicit knowledge of the Ricci-Flood Kähler form, or, if in physical terms, even worse, it involves a knowledge of a conformal field theory, Kähler form of the conformal field theory, which is asymptotically Ricci-Flood, but nobody knows what it is. Okay, so how do you construct such a manifold? Now, one hint of what one might do is to use previous experience where you know, people did string theory and Calabi-Yau manifolds without ever knowing the metric. And one way to do that is, instead of dealing with a nonlinear signal model on X, you pick a linear signal model, a gauge theory, whose Higgs branch is X itself. And so this theory proves it's a physical model, and in infrared, you expect it to flow to a fixed point, or conformal field theory, with naturally, by construction, conformal metric on X. Okay. So this is something Ed did in 92, I guess. Okay, so to do that, so again, the idea is to pick a two-dimensional gauge theory with n equals to 2 supersymmetry, and to pick it such that its Higgs branch is going to be your is going to be Calabi-Yau X. So, and you pick a gauge group, some number, I guess, n of chiral fields with some set of charges, okay? Then the Higgs branch, so n equals to 2 in 2 dimensions is n equals to 4 in 1, and so it's 4 real supercharges. Anyway, so your classical Higgs branch is obtained by setting the D-tier potential to 0 and dividing by G, okay? And if some of the charges is 0, then the holomorphic n form of Cn is invariant under G, and so the quotient gives you a Calabi-Yau manifold X, which inherits the Kähler form and the holomorphic n form from G. The Kähler form simply by starting from C. Sorry, by starting with a Kähler form in Cn, restricting to solutions of D-term equations, and divided by G. Okay. So this is well known. Okay. So you can get a nice geometric picture of what this space is. So the space is a vibration. The way you see this is there's a projection where you take your scalar fields, just forget their phases, and then restrict to solutions of D-term equations. Okay, and then the fibers is a torus of phases of axes modulo G. Okay. Okay, so a simple example of such a Calabi-Yau manifold, which will turn out to be sufficient for my purposes, although you can do many other things, is just an S2 small resolution of a conifold. Okay? Okay, so you pick U1 gauge theory with 4 chiral fields, with charges as follows, okay, set the D-term to 0 and divide by G. Okay? So the picture I want you to keep I would like you to keep in mind during this talk is how, you know, what does this mean? So you can just draw the base space as setting, for example, x1 is equal to 0 here. This is x4 is equal to 0. x3 is equal to 0. So my x's here are, this is absolute value of x3 squared, absolute value of x4 squared, 1 squared. Okay? So far I haven't done anything, but then there's an x2, and if you just look at this equation, this tells you that you're constrained to an interior of a polyhedron. This size is R. So I live in, you know, this place, and this hyperplane cuts it. Okay? So if you pick a generic point somewhere here inside, you have a torus, P3, which is the phases of the four coordinates, P4 mod U1. Okay? Now, the only interesting, so this space is just a vibration, it's local, it looks like R3 cross T3. But the interesting things about the space is places where some of the cycles degenerate, which is obviously when some of the coordinates go to zero. Okay? And that happens at the faces. Okay? Or on the intersections of faces. So for example, there's a one-dimensional face here. Over this one-dimensional face, there's an S1 generically, which is a finite size, because two coordinates are zero. Okay? So there's an S1, and this S1 goes to zero at the endpoints. So this is your P1, the sphere, which is in the small resolution of the conifold, and its size depends on the Kähler class on R. Okay? So this is just very simple. Okay. So of course you constructed a Calabi-Yau manifold. As I said, there's an actual metric which comes as induced from CN. Okay. But that certainly is not a Ricci flat metric, nor is it a conformal field theory metric. But in infrared, you will get your conformal sigma model with a conformal metric. It's an implicit construction. Okay. So how do I construct special Lagrangian submanifolds of this space? Well, special Lagrangian condition is given by vanishing of the Kähler form and the imaginary part of omega. Now, the Kähler form and the holomorphic N form come basically by restriction from the Kähler form in CN. So all the Lagrangian submanifolds, so every special Lagrangian submanifold of X of CN will descend to a special Lagrangian submanifold of X. Okay? That's a bit too fast, yes. But, okay.
Are you guaranteed that the special
Well, you would expect to, yes.
What is this survival normalization?
What?
That's being something. So, I mean, you specify this condition up in the ultraviolet, and why?
Yes, that is a hard question, which I don't have. No, it's not. Well, physically, you would expect that to happen. That, you know, you start with the construction of the ultraviolet and in infrared, you will get a special Lagrangian. You know, as the metric deforms, your submanifold deforms so as to stay special Lagrangian. Okay?
What's the physical meaning of this of the boundary condition defining special Lagrangian?
It's supersymmetry.
Yes.
The question is whether the supersymmetry flows correctly. In zero-two models, for example, you can write down a chiral supersymmetry which survives in the infrared. Of course, there's another question as to where those angles do, of course. And zero two model, that's part of the problem. There's a chiral supercurrent which you believe survives, which is how all on the flow. But I guess the question is whether.
Well, first, you have.
Can you change that triangle? What supersymmetries are you actually preserving with these boundary conditions of the original motion?
Well, you're preserving one half of supersymmetry. You know, it depends what you.
Yeah.
For special Lagrangian, I'm not sure. I can tire with. I will throughout this talk. I will take just the geometric space time point of view. This is something that yes, absolutely, you should go ahead and check it. However, you know, you can be very skeptic and say, well, I don't know whether it is going to happen or not. But I will give you very strong checks at the end that what we are doing actually makes sense. You know, there definitely is a host of technical issues involved here, and I will not address many of them.
This is not a technical issue. This is a physical issue. The question is what you're actually.
I physically expect there to be, you know, a special ground in infrared. Okay.
No, that may be true, but
okay.
The issue is whether.
What is your question?
The other point to make is that in general there isn't any which you find accurate. Infrared anymore. You have trouble defining it.
No, I'm not talking about a Ricci flood metric.
Exactly.
So I'm just constructing the thing in there.
I'm defending you in the sense that the question of whether what you end up with is a spectral Lagrangian is not even known to be the right question. So it's
kind of. Isn't what's really being said here that at infinite volume you want special Lagrangian, and after that you want something that
deserves
right to supercharges, right. And it's a quantum deformation of special Lagrangian,
right.
And you should stop arguing about
that.
If infrared fixed point still exists, then you should get something.
Yeah. The issue is if you say you're counting something.
Uh-huh.
Then what are you actually counting? Are you counting something? Are you actually counting special Lagrangian? Are you counting something else?
I'm not counting any special. I'm just doing a construction.
Well, at the end of the day, you're going to
presume
that they're going to. Well, maybe you'll let me finish.
Are your calculations done at large radius?
What?
Can your calculations.
The calculation is absolutely done. I mean, you know, the question I'm addressing is a question about large radius limit.
Yeah.
It makes sense at the large radius
limit. You can just work semi-classically, right? And just.
Right, then it is special Lagrangian.
You can grab the massive field of the Wiener signal all out.
Sure. Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
So, the other instructions are instantons, which is what she's
doing. But no, they're alpha prime corrections.
Right.
You know, even.
No, but alpha prime corections are. It's a superpotential effect. Isn't it an n equals 1 superpotential that would obstruct it on the world volume of your brain?
Obstruct what?
What are you talking about?
You think it's a
beach? No, it's not a beach. It's a superpotential.
Maybe I.
Moving all arms, but, yeah.
So, at this point.
So, it won't be. If it's a superpotential, it won't be determined at alpha prime.
That's right.
It'll be determined at alpha prime.
Could we let her put brain on this before we have discussions about the brain theory?
Did you say that the Cauchy matrix is not Ricci flat?
No.
You didn't say that?
No, it's not Ricci flat.
So then, what goes wrong? So omega adds before on the quotient. Is that not holomorphic parallel?
What? Oh, basically, what this quotient does for you, it just gives you the class of the Kähler form, right? And
you did write down omega x.
Yeah, I mean, sure, you know, you're.
What is wrong with omega x? If omega x is holomorphic parallel.
It's just not associated with a Ricci flood metric. You know, its classes will be the same as the class of the Kähler form, which comes from a Ricci flood metric, but that's about all I can say.
But what goes wrong with omega x? Is omega x holomorphic and parallel? Is that
a form? It's a Kähler form, but it's not Ricci flood.
Omega x, I'm not talking about the small omega x, I'm talking about
the capital.
Yeah, if the capital omega x
of
the parallel volume form, then you have Ricci flat, and that's all. So therefore, what goes wrong with capital omega x?
No, there's nothing wrong with capital omega x.
Then if capital omega x is a holomorphic parallel volume form, you would have Ricci flat.
You have little omega x.
But it's not given by the small omega.
We'll get a special advice with respect to this other little omega x.
You mean the capital omega is not related to little omega?
Right. My problem is more with little omega than with big omega. Okay. All right. So, so on CN, the Kähler form on CN can be written in the simple form. So one way to construct a Lagrangian submanifold, so some manifold with just omega vanishes, is to pick any subtest of the base locally, and then this instructs you to sort of pick the directions in the fiber which are orthogonal to it. Okay. So if you want to get an actual submanifold, not just something which satisfies Lagrangian condition locally, you need to pick rational linear subspaces of the base, which are just hyperplanes. Okay. So they're given by equations of this type in this space. And so where Q is some set of integers, I see and C is a constant, which are moduli of the Lagrangian. Still, this is all in Cn. And then you can solve what happens to the faces. So just to go down to X, there's nothing really much new that happens. But all you have to require is that in addition you do satisfy the D-term constraint and you have to divide by G. Okay? So the choice of little Qs from the previous transparency, together with the choice of the collabial, specifies your special Lagrangian in the specifies your special Lagrangian submanifold. Okay, sorry, your Lagrangian submanifold. If you also want it to be special Lagrangian, then the imaginary part of omega on your submanifold has to be zero, and just by looking at what theta do, you can see that that this is so if the sum of all charges is zero. Okay. Right. So again, as an example, would be for the carnival. Basically, the only thing you can do is to pick charges as follows. For example, x2 and x4 in the following way. So together with the D-term constraint, what it basically does for you is it tells you should pick basically a real line in the base space because there's one sort of one free variable. Okay, and then. If you don't want to have any bound, necessary condition not to have any boundaries is to pick C1 and C2 to lie anywhere on the boundary of the on the boundary of this polyhedron. Okay, so if you pick just the generic choice of C's, then the topology of the special Lagrangian. So I have a line in the base and two orthogonal directions to the fiber, which gives you an S1 cross S1. Okay. So topology is generally R cross S1, R plus cross S1 cross S1. Okay. Now, if you look at what this point does, if the choice of C is generic, this will be a boundary, the place where this line intersects the boundary of the polyhedron. So what you have to do is sort of double it. Okay. That's all. So that's a just a generic construction. Okay. And of course, this really is nothing new. This is something mathematicians knew a long time ago. These original examples, basically, of Harvey and Lawson of construction of special Lagrangians. Okay. Now, of course, you have what it tells you. You have two real moduli generically, and two Wilson ones, which is sort of what you expect from this MacLean's theorem. Okay. Now, as I move my special Lagrangian around, I can come to one of these special lines, and I can come to one of the one-dimensional boundaries. And what happens there, right, is that one of these circles, which was a finite size before, shrinks. So the topology for your Lagrangian is now two copies of C cross R, right? And then you don't really have to keep both of them. You can just keep one of them and have a manifold without a boundary. Okay.
Could you go back to the moduli counting for a second?
Yes.
So MacLean's theorem is for compact cycles, and these cycles extend off to infinity in some directions, right?
Right.
So are you fixing some conditions at the boundary or?
We should talk about this later.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm just doing the construction. So. I tell you I have two real moduli, two Wilson lines. That's all.
And that includes varying things at infinity, in other words.
This is basically local deformation.
Okay, so this doesn't include varying.
Just hold on a sec. Depends what you mean. Depends what you mean by changing things at infinity. Actually, yeah. I mean, obviously, right? If I just, depends what you mean by changing boundary conditions, right? I mean, I'm moving this point, right? Let's talk about this later. It's not too important. Okay. And so you can bring it to one of these one-dimensional boundaries where you can just keep sort of one copy of you can keep one copy of your D-brain instead of two, in which case it has the Pauli C times R and can move away. It can move anywhere, you know, along this one-dimensional grid, but not away. Okay, so it has one real modulus and one Wilson one. Okay, so later I will show you that this has actually non-vanishing superpotential. There are non-vanishing disk instanton corrections for this thing. Okay. So I come to mirror symmetry. As I said, work of Kanchara, Hori, and Vafa is indispensable here. So what they did basically they succeeded in making mirror symmetry geometric in the sense that they started with a linear sigma model, which we describe your Kolobyov X, and they dualized in the sense of two-dimensional gauge spherality. They dualized all the phases of all the chiral fields in your model. Okay, so in some sense, you know, modulo G action, modulo gauge group action. This is T-duality on the fiber. So this is what you expect from Stramaggi and Zaslow. Okay. So it turns out that the dual theory is a Landau-Ginzburg theory, and this theory is written in terms of chiral fields, twisted chiral fields, which are related to the original fields in the following way, and then the D-term constraint on the original side maps to multiplicative constraints in terms of these y variables. Yes, and then you have superpotential, which is this modulo these constraints. So anyway, okay. So this tells you that the solution of linear sigma model is equivalent to some Landau-Ginzburg theory, which is not actually too geometric. But you can state this mirror symmetry in a geometric language, which says basically that the Landau-Ginzburg theory is geometrically equivalent to a non-compact Kolobyov manifold, to a B model on the non-compact Kolobyov manifold, which you get by which is given by the following equation. So W is just the original Landau-Ginzburg superpotential. And if the original space was a Kolobyov manifold, there's a gauge symmetry you can divide by, so that this manifold has a right dimension.
Could you explain what? So in mirror symmetry, you map a point in Kalar and complex moduli space to a point in Kalar and complex moduli space.
That's right.
Can you explain how are being mapped here? I mean, if the mirror is an LG theory, you've already fixed a point in the mirror Kalar moduli space.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
If the mirror is an LG theory, for instance, you've already implicitly fixed a point in the mirror Kalar moduli space. So this only works at certain complex structures on the first side? Or what's the story?
So in mirror symmetry, you generically expect that all the problems about a complex structure and questions about a Kalar structure on a given side decouple, right? So basically,
logical theories, yeah.
Okay, it's the same statement holds for Kintaro's and Kumon's statement. Basically, what they have control over is the two theta terms. Okay, is the RDF terms. They have absolutely no control over the D terms. They know absolutely nothing what is happening there. So the way to understand all of this duality is just sort of to mod out, you know, just forget about all the questions, everything about the complex structure on the A model side, and just keep all just the information about a complex structure on the B model side, okay? Forget about every Kalar structure here. Makes absolutely no sense, okay? No questions.
I mean, the duality is always without a superpotential.
What?
So you couldn't really even deform the complex structure.
Well, you can deform the complex structure.
Well, the duality was always turning off the potential.
Well, yeah.
You can turn off the superpotential that gives you.
But that's, you know, that's a, it, if you just, you know, if you take a Kolobyov manifold, you know, what sort of hypersurface constraint you put on the Kalar structure, it doesn't influence it in any way, okay? So in that sense, the question is basically relevant. If you ask the right sort of questions, that kind of asking is irrelevant. You know, you can still answer only a certain subset of questions you might want to ask, but you know, that's not.
Can I try to say again what you said, and then you agree if
okay.
Because some of us are confused. So on the first side, on the A model side, you keep the Kähler moduli and you forget the complex structure totally. And if I forget, we might even mean drop the terms in the linear sigma model.
Yeah, or I can change them if I want. No.
And what you're saying is that they've derived a mirror symmetry in the sense that in that model, in that A model, they can construct a B model where we've forgotten entirely about
structures.
It's just the Landau-Ginzburg theory.
Right.
We can vary the complex structure.
Right. That's
the
way that's right.
Polynomial.
Right.
But, but you land on the LG theory of the second side, and now you're saying that since you don't care about Kähler moduli, you're going to go to a large radius limit of that side.
She's not doing the
work. No, but what is this geometrically equivalent?
No. Well, what is geometrically equivalent means that the if you take this Kabyal computed, you know, topological B model, it's going to be equivalent to the Landau-Ginzburg theory in the sense of topological field theory, correlation function.
That's what I was just saying.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I'm
just not sure.
If you want to use that language, you don't even have to go to our
And now you're thinking
you don't have to go to the special you just don't know anything about complex structure in the first cycle.
You want to go to where you can talk about geometry.
Well, you could directly do the calculation in LG also.
I understand the geometry. You can understand it in a very limited way if you want, or you can understand it in a more generous way if you want. But as long as you're asking, you know, about complex structure, you just don't care. I mean, geometry and complex structure and questions about a complex structure are very loosely related in the first place.
Actually, it's not really even obvious for non-compact body analysis that the B model is actually Kähler, independent of the Kähler structure.
Why do you say that?
Because the observable is a weakly measure dependent.
In reality.
It's always ignored, I think, but...
Okay, you'll make me lie after this talk. So once we have this, you know, starting with the A model brain, you can identify it. You can ask what is it mapped under this mirror symmetry. And so you start, the A model brains were given by Lagrangian submanifolds by choices of these integer skills. Okay. And you expect that the mirror of Lagrangian submanifolds are going to be homomorphic submanifolds of the mirror geometry. Okay. So in this mirror map, you basically have control on only control only of the absolute values of axes, not on their phases. But the mirror map, together with expectations of homomorphy, tells you that Lagrangian submanifold of x, given by essentially this equation, maps to a homomorphic submanifold on the B model side, given by a homomorphic constraint of the following type. Okay. And here the real part of U's are related to the real module of the Lagrangian, where you put it in the diagram, and you expect that the imaginary part is going to be related to the Wilson line. Okay. Okay, so we go back to the example. Okay, so the D-term constraint given by the set of charges maps the multiplicative relation of this type. So your mirror manifold is given by these two auxiliary variables and the solar potential. Okay. And the A brain I chose, the one which was just sort of a straight line coming out of the board, had the following set of charges. So this maps to this type of relation here. Okay. So combining these two equations tells you that the mirror B brain is given by an equation is a one-dimensional complex curve given by xz is constant. So this is topologically awkward as one. For a generic choice of the right-hand side. Okay. But I know that on the A model side, if you take this D brain and approach it to one of these boundaries, to one of these one-dimensional boundaries, that something special happens, it sort of splits into two. So I can ask, at least in the large radius limit of the A model side, you should see this... in the large radius limit of the A model side, you should sort of geometrically be able to understand the B model side. Let me see. So I had, so my brain had two choice of phases, which was basically okay. So. Technical support is gone.
That's right.
You're on your own. Can you hear me? Okay. Right. Probably just go back to the fancy, I guess. So let me first give you a geometric sort of picture of what the mirror manifold looks like. So the mirror manifold is given by something like xz is f of w of u and v. Well, in this case, this is given, this is e to the u plus e to the v plus e to the minus t plus u plus v plus 1. I'm in the right phase, that's a second. Sorry, just a second. I'll take you through this. I'm sorry, but anyway. So the mirror manifold is given by, so there's some choice of C star and some choice of patches, and it's given by the following xz. So this is the equation of the mirror. Okay, so then what I, so you have that the brain is just simply given here by saying, so the brain itself is given by choice of u and v as parameters, as modulo of the brain. Okay, so the real part of u was related to where you put the brain on this diagram, and the imaginary part was non-geometric and related to the Wilson line. Okay, so so in the large radius limit, I had basically two phases. One where I chose the, as here, I chose the real part of v, which is c2, to be equal to zero. And I choose R, the size of the P1, to be really large, and I put and okay, so still need a few more things. So your Calabi-Yau manifold is given by equation of the following type. Okay, so So what this manifold is locally, basically, it looks like C3, and then there's special loci where xz becomes 0, okay, and which is given by a complex curve, which just flattens out sort of these lines, okay? So this is special from the point of view that you can look at it as sort of a vibration of xz is constant, where the fiber is generically arcless S1, but then when this constant vanishes, it degenerates to two copies of C given by either X varies and Z0 or Z0 and X varies. Okay? So in the large radius limit on the A model side, I take this P1 to be really large, okay? And then I can put the brain somewhere here, sort of, but such that it's still away from these boundaries, from any of these points. The reason I do that is, you see, I drew a P1, so this brain goes like this. I drew a P1, an S2, okay? And the D brain is topologically arcless S1, right? So basically, you can take a holomorphic disk, you can take half of the sphere, which has a boundary on your Lagrangian D brain, okay? Okay, so as long as the D brain is not close to these points, these disks are really large and you're in the classical limit. Okay? So again, this limit was you take T, which was related, which is roughly the size of this S2. You take T to be really large. You take U to be really large, and V was equal to 1. So U is really large means this goes to 0. So then when you find that once you do that, that this equation actually becomes X is equal to 0. Can you follow this? I have a Calabi-Yau manifold. I know where I put the brain on the A model side. I take the large radius limit, and I see that on the B model side, your Calabi-Yau restricted to the brain degenerates to an equation of the type X is equal to 0, where I can pick either one half or the other half. Okay, but it's sort of just a check that you're doing the right thing. Okay, so this is one thing you can do, or you can put the brain somewhere here, or you can put the brain here. In which case, so you get a curve which is parameterized now by two variables, U and V, okay? And U is sort of a good coordinate in this region, and V is a good coordinate in this region, okay? So when I take this D-brain, now it's V is its parameter, I take it far away here, again the same thing happens. The position of the brain, the classical position of the brain on the A-model side tells you that you have to sit at X is equal to 0, and you pick one half, okay? That's all, this geometry. All right, and again, here U is a good variable, here's V is a good variable, because roughly in the large radius limit, it measures the size of the homomorphic disk, which ends on a D-brain. All right. So
essentially you're going to be driven to large, or the
epsilon effects
go away?
Right, that's right. That's right. Exactly. Okay. So this is just identification of the this mirror symmetry energy, and starting with the A model brain deriving the B model brain. And what this should tell you in principle that, you know, all the amplitudes you compute on the A model side with boundaries in a special Lagrangian should be the same as the B model amplitudes on the B model brain. Okay? So one thing you can do is you can compute a partition function on a disk. Okay, and on general grounds, this partition function is expected to take the following form. Again, this is in a topological A model. This is you're just dealing with an enumerative geometry. So the partition function itself is given by some set of integers, right? Times the action of your disk, right? So Q here is exponentiates the volume of the spheres in your Calabi-Yau, and Y exponentiates the volumes of the homomorphic disks. So K and M basically label the relative homology class of your disk. Okay, and the partition function. This is just the partition function of the ML theory, right?
Of the open string theory on the...
Yeah.
Okay. So that will be a function of U and V, and so on the position of the brain.
Right, that's right.
But you suppress that,
yeah. So, that's a good question, actually. If you go to a large radius limit, right, then the position of the brain measures your disk.
Right.
Measures the size of your disk. Okay. Because my position of the brain is where I put it, sort of here, right?
Okay.
And this is also related to the size of the disk, that's right.
So X is a function of U and V, is what you're saying, or U or...
U and V are D-model variables, yeah. Right, which are related, right.
They're mirror variables.
Yes, I mean, right, exactly.
I'm still looking at you. You're doing something
with... So, what T here is, yeah. What? You know, I can... saying that... I'm sorry.
I'm confused about what you're computing.
Okay.
The question is, what's the meaning of this potential-like thing in the D-brain Goldberg theory?
Yeah, what is it? The actual
it is the actual superpotential of the n equals to 1 theory.
Oh, it is the superpotential.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Good.
In four dimensions, right. Okay. So, yes, as Eva says, these axes act both as the moduli of your special Lagrangian and the sizes of the sizes of the disk measuring the action of the instanton. Okay, so in general, I mean, you would expect, you know, these coefficients just to be any arbitrary integers, right? And this formula is much more constrained. It's a prediction by Kummerling and and his collaborators. And so this basically tells you that this amplitude has to have very strong integrality property. Not only the coefficients are integers, but they're really strong. Very particular kinds of integers, yes.
Sorry, for just the closed string A model, when you say that you're summing over numbers of curves,
yes,
there's some elaborate story involving it.
Exactly.
Is there a similar elaborate
story? There's a similar elaborate story here, which is being worked out.
It's being worked out.
Yes.
What they're referring to?
What you mean by these numbers?
What do you mean by the numbers? I mean, in general, these really curves have moduli.
Like
yeah.
Okay.
Right, exactly. Okay, so on the B model side, right, the partition function on the disk computes for you the classical action. Again, it's this does not depend on the volume of the collabial, so it's just a field theory. So if you choose Newman bounding conditions on the collabial, that is, you wrap a six brain on the collabial, this is given by a holomorphic Chern-Simons action of the following type, and this is just a holomorphic three form on the collabial, and this is a holomorphic connection for ND brains. Okay. If you're interested in lower dimensional holomorphic brains, your action is given just by dimensional citing by this action and dimensional reducing. Okay, so in our case, the D brains wrap holomorphic curves in the mirror manifold. Yeah. Anyway, and from the connection, you get two independent sections of the normal bundle, which deform the curve in the collabial. And since your manifold is a collabial, you can rewrite for a single D-brain. I'm forgetting about this term vanishes, and your action is just given by the following type. So this holds when if in the patch where you take omega to be constant, but more generally, just given by a pullback of a holomorphic two form whose derivation is omega. Okay. So then the prediction is that you can compute the A model partition function on the disk by computing the simple integral on the B model side.
So you're saying that should reproduce all the coefficients, those D's and stuff?
Yes.
Whereas here you have no data about.
What?
Sorry, on this side you don't have any data about maps or anything like that. You're just doing simple integral.
On this side, I'm just computing the D-brain action. Okay. So.
Is it what coordinate is I'm computing?
What?
That's
right. So far, we don't have a general. Let me get to that. That will come later, right? Anyway, so if you have a homomorphic D brain, this vanishes because this anti-homomorphic derivative hitting this homomorphic map vanishes. Okay. One way for W not to be to be non-vanishing is if you have obstructed homomorphic deformation, says. Sharmi talked about in his papers, and I'll be on, sorry. And but more generally, And an alternative way to have W non-zero in our case is basically by imposing boundary conditions at infinity. Okay, and so more particular. Okay, so our D brain just wraps a curve parameterized by Z in this manifold, and a flat D brain would be given just by choice of U and V, okay? Just by choice of the position of the D brain on the curve, okay? Now, in general, just to compute an action, actually field theory, pick an arbitrary field configuration with but you have, since the brain is non-compact, the boundary conditions of infinity are not the moduli. So then you just evaluate the superpotential. Homomorphic three form for this manifold is simple. It's just given as follows, and integrating. So dz by z integral is trivial. It just gives you a 2 pi factor, which I didn't put in here. And so your superpotential is just the integral of a homomorphic form over the Riemann surface, over that Riemann surface. So I will pick a point u star, one point, if you want, p star at infinity, and take a d brain, which goes to some other point p. And take an integral, and that's superpotential. Okay. So.
So you end up with one-dimensional
form. Yes. So again, I'm just repeating the story. The partition function on a disk is computed by the D-Brain action of the B-model.
Is this function smooth everywhere? Does it bond somewhere?
Well, okay, so, I mean, oh, it's spectral, yes. I mean, absolutely, yes. W does have singularities, and singularities precisely happen when you sort of take a brain and, you know, it happen in this region, when you approach the distribution as you expect. Right, absolutely. Sorry.
Do you know how to use
her?
Is it a
call? Let me just get to that. I mean, I'll give you a specific example. So for this deep brain, there were sort of two phases where you can put it, localize the brain around this region or somewhere around, far away around here. Okay, so this interior region is what I call phase one. Okay, and so W is just given by the following equation, and dW then is given by the following log. This is basically what Kuhn predicted
You're saying
you know
there are only two disks here.
So this tells you, once you evaluate this integral, that there are precisely two homomorphic disks. That's right. So one which corresponds to this side, and another one which corresponds to this side. And this function, and this diverges if you take u to be equal to t. Or, I guess, plus t. Anyway. What? Yeah, so you just expand this, right? I mean, so this is du of w, right? Which I say it's two sets of logs, so it's sum over e to the minus u to the n, right, over n. Right, so this gives you factors n square, which is, so w is this, after sign. Which is the form you expect.
So that's something you directly computed without using mirror symmetry.
This is directly using mirror symmetry, right? So, okay.
Wait,
so this is your curve. This is the equation.
Use the mirror map.
Okay. This is the equation of the curve.
Good.
Right. So W is given by V of U du, right? Hence dW d by W of U is V of U. Okay. So if I solve for V using this equation, right, I get that V is given. So this is the linear redefinition of variables, U to U hat. Okay, so if you solve this equation, right, this tells you that E to the V multiplying 1 plus E to the minus T minus U plus 1 is 0, right? Or that V is ratio of the logs. And U is related to U hat by the slip of a sign.
Remind us how we say U was the area of a homomorphic disk.
The expressions of this type, right, make sense. I mean, you expect them to converge only in the large radius limit, right? When Q is when Q goes to zero and when Y goes to zero. Oh, sorry. When Q goes to zero and when Y goes to zero. Look at me.
I don't understand how the disk is stable. If a disk is not a sphere,
well, it has boundary conditions, right?
What?
It's a string with boundary conditions on your D-brain, right? I mean,
right.
I think I have a few. I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry.
Is there a question?
The problem is that it's almost within this of the sphere.
Well, perhaps half the sphere.
It has a body.
Yeah, and the edges have to
be divided into deeper.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think the edges are deeper.
Yeah, there's a deep brain there.
The deep brain intersects a particular the equator of the sphere, and that's where the string ends. That's why you can't deform it all.
Oh, it's a different guy. Can you see that? You can?
This is not a very flattering
game. Sorry. This is the S1, this is the S2, right? Your D-brain intersects this S2 along one of the big circles, okay? So this is your D-brain, it's non-compact. Okay, and then I can wrap a string, right, on this half sphere, and it ends on the D-brain. The D-brain is topologically C across S1, right? And this S1 sits roughly at the origin of C, so the D-brain just ends on it.
Yeah.
Understand?
So the boundary conditions are that the string ends on the Lagrangian Sarmanek, which is three-dimensional.
Yes. Yes.
But I was asking this question about the mirror map. So the mirror map is to say that U is the area of the basic holomorphic disks. And I think you told us that earlier. So I just wanted to remind us how you knew that.
One problem is that if on the amount side you sort of go to small radio, right? Small sphere, that your geometry,
I think I lost a piece.
That's just a fun thing.
Okay, so that your geometry starts making sense. Okay? Yes. So what so you take a limit where this S2 is large, okay, and where the D-brain is not anywhere close, and then you can sort of just compare it by the mirror. In general, yes. Is that?
I guess another question is there a general principle you have for fixing the mirror map? Close string mirror symmetry, there's some monotonous story that you can use.
No, we don't have that. We don't have it yet.
So is this just a guess? This mirror
map? It is a guess. That's right.
The same as the Hori-Botha guess for the local formula that gives you the mirror miracle. What's remarkable here is...
So, okay, what will be remarkable is if I put this D-brain here, right, somewhere here, then, well, this is how your superpotential looks like. Okay, it's a fairly ugly function.
Well, no, I mean if we admit that we have this geometric, this Hori-Botha type of transformation, then can't we... compute and what we think is the area.
Right, and
what's holomorphic disk?
No, because the A model quantities, which you're comparing the B model quantities against, right? B model is exact, it's just classical.
We can discuss the question of whether this is justified, but at least you could tell me that, some naive computation produces that U is the area.
Can you show us the error that has a disk of area U that's being, sliced in half by the three brain when volumes are all large on the
animal?
So you compute the area of the disk, and it is U. And indeed, we could dispute whether we should believe it, but at least it's U.
Okay.
I'm so confused by this, because I understand how to do that computation when the volume is large.
Right.
But now, couldn't there be corrections to that computation when the volume is small that would change these integers? It wouldn't change the leading integer, but it would change the ones deeper into the series.
This is an issue just in the closed string, and understanding the closed string case in these linear circuit models. The naive guesses you have for the right sort of coordinates for the moduli do not match what you expect in geometry. Essentially get a different set of.
There is no real guess. I mean, what you know on the A-model side is that, so I was writing some deep flatness terms, right? So on the A-model side, the mirror map told you that this t sort of is related to the coefficients, right, on the of the club, yeah, right. So indeed, what will happen is that.
I'm basically saying if u is x
right. So this t gets deformed to something called something which t has, right? Which is t to the leading term and then plus principal fractions.
Camina, it'd be a good idea to put the microphone back. You could.
Sorry.
But you really are saying that in this particular case we've discussed so far, that it doesn't happen in this problem.
So, okay, for the confold, the example I'm giving you here is the only example, basically, where the closing mirror map itself is trivial, right? So okay, if you take anything else, this will not be the case. We have, this is sort of, part of the stuff is also, these are computations, for example, for P1 times P1.
Can I ask you a question about the easy example again first?
Yeah.
I mean, in the easy example, part of the point.
So these are the types of numbers you get. I mean, there's an infinite number. We don't have an actual general proof that all of them are integers, but as much as we check, they all have. This is extremely non trivial because they don't any odd integers.
So
it's the
inequality. This is a contract. I have the one I have here. P1 times P1 in the general limit, where basically you keep only one P1 to the finite side. But we've done F1, F2, all the circuits again. It looks like P2.
What happens if you take the confold, if you go back to the confold point a few times?
Well, then, you lose control of geometry.
But on the,
In just the confold case, don't you have two different ways of computing? One is what you just described to us, where you know the Hori-Bopha map, and you map the cycle over, and you get this log. But if they're isolated disks, O'Grady and Bopha already conjectured a multiple cover formula. And if they're isolated disks, you can just sum them directly.
Yeah.
So there, don't you actually have a check? It's not just a guess, but you have a check.
If you look at the formula, right. Exactly what you
right. thought. Right. So the first case that you gave us is actually strong evidence.
So only two numbers. The other ones you can understand. You can understand all these ones here, for example. Why they're all ones and stuff
like that.
But in the other case. Well, it's hard. I don't know what to worry about.
You were standing in front of the number.
I will. that's not a problem for a physicist. I don't know. It's not a problem for me. Okay, so that's basically all I had to tell you.